Have you read my Amazon number one best-selling book, 101 Biggest Mistakes Nonprofits Make and How You Can Avoid Them Yet? It's the book that I wrote with expertise from over 20 nonprofit leaders and their 300 years of combined experience. You can download it for free today. Just visit andrewolson.net and go to the free resources tab on my site.
Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, your home for all things fundraising and nonprofit leadership. I'm your host, Andrew Olson. Before we get into today's episode, I've got a favor to ask. If you like what you hear on this podcast, please go over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and rate the show and leave us a review. It helps us reach more people and make a bigger impact in the world. So thank you in advance for doing that. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. This is Andrew. I'm here with my good friend, Arielle Randall. She's the director of communications at Jews for Jesus, a global evangelical ministry that I happen to partner with and have had the joy of getting to know her for goodness now, probably 5 or 6 years. We're going to talk today about communications, marketing, and fundraising in crisis. Arielle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. It's great to be here.
Hey, before we get into the core content that we're going to talk about, take a minute to tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself, your background, and about who Jews for Jesus is, what y'all do.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Jews for Jesus, just an incredible organization reaching out to Jewish communities across the world. And the majority of our staff are Jewish believers in Jesus and nationals to the countries in which they serve. So we're all about raising up indigenous Jewish communities to serve our people. Our biggest effort is in Israel, where we have over 50 native Hebrew-speaking Israelis who are serving there, meeting so many needs in the land. Physical needs, spiritual needs, building community. It's really a beautiful thing. I've been serving with Jews for Jesus since 2012, and I actually started on the field in Chicago doing youth ministry, discipling women, and building community there. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And then really just had another incredible experience and opportunity to be able to transition into the communications side of the work we do and telling the stories of the incredible things that are happening across the globe, and been serving as our director of communications now since 2019, and just been an amazing journey.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So you and I think we started working together back in like 2017, if my memory is correct. And in that time, you've had to deal with three major crises on the global scale, right? So the first was COVID, right? The second being the war in Ukraine and, you know, navigating that with your, you know, missionaries and those you serve over in Eastern Europe. And then the third, very recent, was the October 7th attack from Hamas in Israel in 2023. I want to talk a little bit about each of those. But I think from broadly speaking, talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you and the ministry think about crisis response and what it means to still be an organization that is doing ministry work on the field while also trying to like engage supporter communities within a crisis situation.
Yeah. So Jews for Jesus, we are boots on the ground, people in local communities serving real needs. So we're like never more at our, at our best, really, when we're stepping up to serve an urgent need in a crisis. And so that's an amazing story to be able to tell. And I think those different, you know, crisis that you mentioned, COVID, Ukraine, and then the war in Israel, each of those times we were able to sort of pivot very easily to talk about what are we doing to respond right now to what's happening. But each time that we experienced a crisis, we would get sort of another tool under our belt from a marketing angle of like how to get that story out there faster, how to make it more tangible to our partners and our donors, how they could also get involved right away and and essentially be those boots on the ground with us make an immediate difference. And so, yeah, we've learned a lot from from walking through those three, and each time we were able to lean on what we learned from the last crisis. So that's also an amazing thing.
Yeah. So let's dig into COVID first, right? So before the pandemic struck, you all were doing a lot of work in the States, at least, for fundraising and support raising, like in churches on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, you had missionaries and headquarters staff, like going into churches very regularly, for presentations and fundraising, support asks. And then you're also doing other things that were very, you know, incarnational and, you know, face to face. Everything changed kind of in a heartbeat with mm-hmm. the pandemic and with communities being shut down. How did you go from all of those church meetings to ensuring that like there was still an opportunity to engage people? Like, what was that like? What were some of the conversations like inside your office? Mm-hmm. And what was the outcome of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to give you my really personal, you know, experience, because I think if people are listening, you know, that's what they'll relate to as, you know, in their own journeys, right? I came back from maternity leave, first day back in the office, right? And I have a staff meeting, I'm gathering all the staff, and it's kind of like, yeah, I'm back, let's get back to business, you know? And somebody on my team, I'll never forget this, somebody on my team says to me, you know, do you think we should like all bring our laptops home just in case we have to like quarantine because of COVID-19 and we can't come to the office tomorrow? And I remember being like, that, you know, like, thank you for asking, but I think that's going to just really not be necessary. And everybody, you know, nobody needs to worry. And I was so wrong. We literally never came to the office ever again, literally. Wow. Like, that was our last day. And we were all quarantined, and then we became actually a fully remote team because everybody moved during the pandemic. And here we are now, like all over the world, that same team that was once all in the office together. So I was not expecting that the next day would become nobody come to the office. And I was getting phone calls. You know, I was like literally walking around with the stroller with my newborn, getting phone calls that are like, yeah, so I think that we're going to have to cancel the 700 church events that are supposed to happen in the next couple of weeks. Like, there's just going to, it's like coming down to, I mean, you remember how it was? It was like the world shut down. Yeah. And it happened very fast, from like, is this going to happen, to like, it has happened, right? And everyone's like prepping. I remember also like being in Target, and you're like, what if we can never leave our house again? And you're like buying all the toilet paper, right? And then you're getting all these phone calls like, and what should we do? We have to cancel everything, all the ministry. And so, so somebody, and it wasn't me, it was somebody who is a really creative thinker and great in a crisis. One of my staff, I'll say her name, Sarah, because maybe she'll listen to this and then she'll hear her shout out. Called me, and you know Sarah, and she called me and said, we have to live stream the event. And it was like one of those moments of like, yes, we do have to, and we have to do that immediately, right? And it was just sort of a no-brainer that we were going to have to figure it out on the fly. And we just dove all in. We'd never done live streams before, but we canceled all 700 events and told all of the churches, we're inviting you to a live stream where we will do the event. And all of our staff around the world started preparing to share messages and updates and Bible teaching over live stream, over Zoom. And it was very fun, right? Because it gave everybody like a mission in a time where you could feel really helpless, like everything's being canceled and I'm stuck at home, but everyone had something to do and they had marching orders, and it was very fun. And what really is cool though is that we pulled it off. We had like 60 Zoom events instead of 700 in-person events, and we learned a ton. And then we've been doing live streams ever since, and they've become actually a really core part of our program, our ongoing program where we're engaging with partners and sharing what's going on and connecting partners very directly to people on the field, right? We're going to have some live streams coming up just in about 10 days here where we have staff on the ground in Jerusalem who are going to share live with thousands of people what's going on in Jerusalem, what life is like there, what ministry is happening, how they can pray, how they can give. So it's become like an evergreen tool for us. And it was born out of that moment of panic of canceling the 700 in-person events.
Now, I feel like, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of organizations maybe miss the mark on is how something like that can also be, like, it's not just that you made a pivot, created a live stream strategy, launched it, and it was successful, and you're carrying it on. But also like the impact that it had even on the lives of the people who are your supporters. I feel like you got a lot of feedback, particularly in the COVID time period, about how important that was. Can you talk a little bit about what you heard from supporters and participants?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people really at that time were sitting at home just in the doom and gloom news cycle, right? So for there to be something that was hopeful and a positive message that they could engage with at that time was huge. I think it really meant a lot to people that they could plug in with us in that way. And it helped them feel like, hey, you might be, you know, sitting at home and not able to go out, but you're actually, you know, part of making a difference. You know, we're serving people in different countries. We were helping people who were homebound and couldn't get food during the pandemic, couldn't get medicine, things like that. So it also gave people an avenue by which they could help and make a tangible difference in that time. And what we've found over time with those live streams too, is that, you know, people are so creative and they actually use that kind of stuff in ways we never imagined. Sometimes we'll get an email with someone with a photo and they're like, here I am with my seminary class. And we tuned into the live stream, our whole class, right? And we're in the Philippines. And you're like, whoa, like that is crazy. We would have never thought to reach out to a seminary in the Philippines and see if they want to stream in with us. Yeah. But I think it's like when you just put out there the best of what you're doing, in ways that are timely and accessible and approachable, then your partners step up and find creative ways to plug in with it and to spread the word, right?
Yeah. So that reminds me, one of the things I think is really different about how you all approach everything you do is just the deep relational aspect of that. Talk a little bit about, you know, sort of how that's ingrained in your culture and not just on the mission field, but even with the supporters that you engage with.
Yeah, it's a great question. We really view our financial partners as true partners in the work. And we view how we serve them is also an extension, right, of our ministry, of our core services, right? So anything we can do to give them resources and connect them more directly with the people out in the field that they're supporting. I feel like a lot of times, you know, our marketing team, our job is sort of just to like make that link and get out of the way so that they can hear directly from the people and have those personal relationships. I mean, you know, I mentioned those church programs that were canceled. Our entire model was founded back in the 70s and 80s on a church program design of, you know, missionaries going to churches and sharing what God's doing on the field. And even though the church events aren't anymore the only way we engage partners, we try to still keep the spirit of that alive, of like, we're connecting really personally to share what's happening and have a face-to-face relationship or whatever that looks like in a digital age, right? That really personal touch.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to Ukraine now. Right. Couple years ish after the pandemic. Yeah. Right. Russia starts this war in Ukraine, invades, and there's an actual shooting war happening. And you all have ministry partners there. You have missionaries. Yeah. You have people that you're serving. What was the conversation? I don't know if you were in your West Coast or East Coast office or if you were overseas when it started, but you know, what was your leadership team? What was that discussion like? And how, what was the response like initially?
Yeah, so it's actually really interesting. When we, so like I said, with COVID, you know, I'm giving you my, my personal behind the scenes experience, right? So I was literally at Disney World with my family, right? Because it's like, you know, the crisis never happens on like the quiet day at the office. It's like, it's always the first day back from maternity leave. Or I was at Disney World, like in line for rides with my kids, and phone starts blowing up that, you know, war broke out in Ukraine. We have all these staff there. And actually the first, I would say like the first 48 hours or so, our whole focus was the, what, you know, to the safety of our staff. That was our, I think, our top concern. And we didn't even know, like, are they going to be able to continue in to serve in Ukraine? Are we going to have to evacuate everybody? You know, so we were asking questions like that. And in my mind, it was kind of like, well, once we know where everything lands, then we'll start telling the story to the partners. And actually, it was someone on your team, Andrew, Victoria, who works very closely with you. And again, I always, you know, want to give a shout out to the brilliant people who kind of, you know, really step up in these times of crisis. And she called me and said, you need to start fundraising now for Ukraine. And I was like, but we don't know yet. What if they might all leave Ukraine? And we're not going to be doing ministry there. It's going to be somewhere else. You know, like and it was like, you know, still that time of like, we don't know where the dust is going to settle even tomorrow on all of this. And she was like, no, just start now and start telling the story that we're in crisis. Our staff are affected. We have to get them out of Ukraine, and the story will evolve, right? Tomorrow you'll know something new. And in a month when we know, you know, where they're serving and the ministry that's happening, then we'll share that piece, but you can start now. And that was huge. That was like a light bulb moment for, you know, again, it's like in each crisis, we learn something. So in that one, I think we really learned like start immediately, even if you don't know what the story is going to be tomorrow, because the story, you have a story now. And you don't need the end of the story yet to bring your partners in. And you can even say, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're you know, we want to keep you, you know, updated urgently and praying and all of that. So then we stepped into high gear and started talking to our supporters. And there was just an outpouring of support for the staff in Ukraine. And what ended up happening was some actually did remain in Ukraine and are still there now serving. Some went to Poland, and we actually opened a refugee center in Poland. Some went to Israel, some went to Australia, they went all over. But what we were able to do is start a fund that was Ukraine, you know, crisis relief related ministry. And then that actually ended up being a global need. Mm. And so it as we just walked through it and kept our partners informed, it all sort of played out in a way that really, sorry, I lost my train of thought. It all played out.
Yeah, no. And that's I think a really good learning, you know, from the idea of like, just start and tell an evolving story, right? So often I think organizations either want to wait until it's finished, like you talked about, or they're hesitant because they maybe don't want to say something that won't be true tomorrow. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas I do think that you miss a lot of opportunity with that hesitation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we don't have to get into specific results, but I think you would probably agree that starting early and just telling that evolving story over time, you know, not only did it really bring your supporters kind of on the journey with you, but they gave sacrificially and really stepped up to support the ministry throughout that entire crisis. Wouldn't you say?
100%. We were just blown away by the generosity. I mean, there was like people, you know, staff in Ukraine that we started just getting floods of gifts with, you know, in these people's names. Mm. And these were not people that we'd used as sort of like a face of the ministry. They weren't known to the staff, but it was like, once they were kind of like, oh, you know, this person is in Ukraine and they're serving right now, we want to give to them. And people just like really wanted to support those individuals on the front lines. And so we were able to make that possible by giving those like really, really timely updates. And actually, I mean, the war is still going on, yeah. Even though it's not in the news cycle as much, you know, as it was, obviously, you know, when it first started, we've woven that in now to the ongoing story of the work we're doing, because it very much is a core piece of a lot of our staff's time. It's in Ukraine, but also ministry to Ukrainian refugees across the world.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective, right? So one of the things that I think you all have done really well is, you know, the emergent crisis happens, you fundraise for it, but then you also are really intentional about reminding and revisiting the story with your supporters over time, either to say, here's what you helped make possible when we were able to, you know, serve these emergency needs, but also like reminding that, like you said, it's still going on, there are still additional needs, and the gift you gave before is still making an impact on the field today, right? Talk a little bit about kind of how you, I think you and Victoria do this really well in your partnership, how you kind of thread that narrative over time and what that strategy looks like.
You know what's funny? Like Ukraine specifically, I've had so many people, I mean, and if you're in marketing, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, where I'll hear on the same day, I'll get a memo from someone saying, we haven't talked about Ukraine recently enough. And then I'll get a memo from someone else saying, there's fatigue around Ukraine, right? So it's like, you're hearing both and you have to really pay attention to the response. I think like with eyes wide open, kind of like, are people really engaged in this? Is there fatigue? Really keep an eye on the results and stay with what your partners are telling you they want to hear. What we've been able to do is talk about Ukraine in an ongoing way, because we have, you know, a framework of the core ministry that we do. And so now Ukraine fits in with that. And obviously when there's a new crisis, it might take you a little while to figure out how to fit it together, but it almost certainly can and does, you know, fit in somehow. And then as we give ongoing updates or we talk about, you know, we report back on results to our partners in a newsletter, or we pitch new vision for a new ministry direction, Ukraine often is sort of one of the layers of that within that larger story of the global core mission.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it's like there's almost like a storytelling architecture that once there's sort of like a big piece, like a crisis, you're thinking about how does this fit in the architecture of the long game of the story we're telling. And I think that's what we've been able to do.
Yeah, and I think a really strong benefit of that is you're able to retain people who give in crisis. Because a lot of organizations, you know, someone gives because of a crisis situation and then they never give again until the next crisis. You've not seen that same phenomenon in your supporter base. I think because you build in that story arc that brings them back to the situation and brings them back to the ministry work that's happening in that region, you know, on an ongoing basis, even when there's not sort of the same level of public awareness of the conflict as there was, you know, in the first few weeks and months. Talk to us a little bit about how you all use video in your storytelling around these crises, and you know, beyond just the live stream, what else are you doing in that respect? Does it have to all be like highly produced, polished content, or are you doing something else around that?
Yeah, so we use a platform where we're able to send video to our partners through text message and email very, very quickly. We use ViewSpark. I know there's other, you know, technologies out there that do something similar, but that has been amazing for us. And you know what's really funny too is like I was saying about every time you have a crisis, you sort of get a new tool under your belt, and that's one of the ones that we've really been able to like figure out how to use those kinds of tools. Because when we first got onto that, the SMS, we were like still in our print mentality, right? Of like, And then we'll, you know, we'll send them a thank you for their gift based on the fund. And, you know, like, yep. It was kind of like this whole complicated back-end system. And then once we started having, you know, these types of things happening, like, you know, Ukraine was really one of the big ones, but there was also before this current war in Israel, you know, in 2021, there was a short war in Israel. You know, as these different things were happening, we kind of realized, like, no, actually, people really want to hear the most urgent thing and want to be in the know. They want to be in the know. They want to know how they can pray, and they want to walk with us, like we were just saying, through the evolving story. Not just getting the months later, oh, thank you, we're reporting back. They want to be with us in the trenches. And that's our brand. We're the people on the ground. And so if you're our partner, that's your story too. You're with us on the ground as the story evolves. And so that platform's been huge for us to be able to just send really quick updates. And what we found is the less produced, the better, because people want to be on the ground, you know, seeing the update from the person's phone in Ukraine, what's happening. And we had one video that we did, like two of our staff, I think they were in Poland, you know, driving to the border with Ukraine to go receive refugees. And they're in the car being like, this is what we're doing right now, you know, pray for us kind of thing. And that's the kind of stuff that we would just get. I mean, we would get hundreds of text messages back and emails back of people being like, I'm praying, you know, we're there with you in spirit at the border. This is, you know, this is incredible. And it's funny, even, you know, ViewSpark made a little promo, and that clip made it in their promo. Like, the guys in the car, and these guys are not even first language English speakers, but all of that adds to the power of, like, this is real. This is not, you know, an executive in their, you know, in their office kind of giving you a pitch, right? This is like real people on the ground, and you're with us. You're with us now. So that's been really beautiful, a beautiful way for us to use video.
Yeah. Yeah. And you all do it really well. I think if any of our listeners are curious, you should get on to the Jews for Jesus ViewSpark, subscribe, because their content's great. So let's move on now to October 7, 2023. Right. And I think it's going to be a similar format of this conversation, right? Talking about where you were when this evolved. And I'll just say where I was, right? So it was a Saturday morning. I was outside on my farm clearing brush. Like, I had a headset on, I had a chainsaw running, and my phone just wouldn't stop blowing up. And so at first I thought it was my kids texting or something. And so I thought, I can just wait till I take a break, till my chainsaw runs out of gas. And then it just wouldn't stop. So I finally picked it up, and it was Victoria on my team saying, we need a meeting. There's been an attack in Israel. And so, you know, pick it up from there. I mean, fairly shortly after that, we were all on a conference call. Talk a little bit about, you know, what it was like on your side, where you were, what the experience was, and then we can get into the details.
Yeah, again, never on the day that you would think. It was a Saturday morning, and I had not had a day off in like a couple weeks, and I was like surviving for this Saturday, right? And so actually I learned a personal lesson in that time to not procrastinate on taking a day off, because a war could happen on that one day off, right? And that's exactly what happened. Woke up, you know, 6 a.m, my phone was going insane. And here's where it starts paying off, right? The learnings from the past. Because we'd walked through COVID, we'd walked through the war in Ukraine, we'd walked through already a short war in Israel and other, you know, crisis response efforts. At 6 a.m. when I woke up, I already had a video from our Israel director saying, tell everybody Israel was just attacked. And at 7 a.m., we had a prayer request out to all of our subscribers. Okay. Right. And so that's the kind of thing that's like, every time you get another tool under your belt, we didn't have to have a conversation. We just knew, like, the marching orders. Right. And so that was really powerful, that we were able to immediately start responding. And because of what we learned, especially with Ukraine, don't wait. You start telling the story immediately. That's what we were able to do with Israel. Immediately start saying, one of our staff's houses was hit by a rocket. 8 of our staff have been drafted. We don't know the ministry needs and what it's going to take to respond, but we're going to make an all-out effort to serve during this time, and we need you to stand with us, right? So we had a story to tell even without knowing yet how everything would land, what the response would be. And so that was very powerful. And your team was incredible, Andrew. We were on a call, like planning the strategy, rewriting every piece of marketing materials within a few hours of us all learning what had happened. And we just built from there.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a fantastic, you know, if you were sitting outside watching, just kind of seeing it all come together, right? Because your team was great. It was just sort of like, hey, we need a call. There were people from all over the world on the call. We're talking through, you know, what is the response that needs to happen here and in what order. I think that, you know, within 12 to 24 hours, you had digital content. You certainly had ViewSpark going out kind of iteratively since the 6 o'clock in the morning. But then it was like email, social, paid ads, search. I think you had a mailing that was, you know, an emergency mail campaign that we put out within like 72 hours. And then what's been, I think, really impactful over, you know, months as the war dragged out and as it evolved into different phases is, again, you've been really intentional about telling different aspects of the story, right? So it went from there's an active, you know, attack in Israel on day of to here's the aftermath to, you know, all of Israel's reservists have been called up and their families now have issues that need to be addressed. They need certain resources. There's food needs that need to be addressed. And you've been able to tell the story of how the ministry has evolved alongside the country, right? To make sure that you're meeting the most relevant needs that are happening. And you've told that in real time. So I think we see in the results, I mean, you know, the amount of support that has come in from those efforts, I sit there and look and say, there's no rational reason why this revenue should have come in, right?
It's
been, you know, certainly God's hand was on all of it. And my goodness, like the level of support, I think because of the way you bring partners into the conversation is stronger than what I've seen in most other crisis situations. If we know what you learned in COVID and we know what you learned at Ukraine, what else have been some of the learnings around the October 7th attack?
Yeah, I think one that we really figured out in this experience is because this was huge, right? I mean, we have, you know, 50 staff in Israel plus all of their families and people's kids are being drafted, you know, it's like, it was just crazy. And then we start partnering with local congregations on the ground, local ministries, and there's just so many things happening that we actually had to figure out. We couldn't tell. There could have been 100 stories that would have been extremely compelling, and we couldn't actually tell them all. And so we had to make some choices to say, look, let's focus in on, you know, some of a key response. So we focused in on food boxes that our staff were helping facilitate the delivery of thousands of food boxes every week for people who'd been displaced because of the war, going to deliver them. And that was opening up a lot of ministry opportunities because we have Israeli volunteers serving with us who are, you know, who are plugging in. We have partner congregations, you know, Arab Christian churches that we're bringing food to, local Messianic Jewish congregations that we're bringing food to, and they're able to feed their people. You know, some of them have, you know, there was thousands and thousands of displaced families or people where maybe they used to have, you know, think about someone who's elderly who had a caregiver and that caregiver has been drafted. You know what I mean? There's like just so many unimaginable situations when you have a huge population that's been drafted, you know, mothers who are at home with tons of children and can't get out, et cetera. So we leaned into that one story about the food boxes and were able to frame a very tangible offer. You know, the food in these boxes cost $50. Send a box. And that ended up being very, very successful for us. And I think it was making that hard call to say we can't actually tell the whole story because it's overwhelming. But then that was the right call, right? To lean into one super tangible piece that people could really understand how they were making a difference. And I'll never forget like sitting on Giving Tuesday and just seeing $50, $50, $50, like thousands and thousands of gifts in increments of $50. And you were like, okay, people are with us. Yeah. They get it. Yeah. They get the story. They get that we need help. And it's thousands and thousands and thousands of people who want to send a box of food to an Arab, Jewish, Christian family in Israel in need right now. And that movement of God's people, of just like thousands and thousands of people stepping up to say, yeah, I'll help with that. It really, really moved me. It was just incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, it's been such a, I mean, you know, the crisis and the attack and the aftermath have been horrible, right? And it just the destruction, is, you know, in people's lives is certainly, you know, nothing to ever be celebrated. The outpouring of generosity as a result has been amazing to watch. And and I think, you know, the stories that you tell have been so impactful. I remember, I think it was one of your View Sparks. I think it was actually a photo instead of a video, but there's this one incredibly emotionally compelling image of a young man. He's probably in his 20s, I would guess. We don't actually see his face in the photo. You see his back, and I think he's got a rifle slung around his back, and he's holding his, say, 3 or 4 year old child, kind of hugging her before he departs because he's been called up. And we looked at that, and I just thought, you know, that is the kind of photo that sets the tone for the entire crisis, right? That sort of thing, and that you're able to share that in real time, I think is really impactful. I want to change direction a little bit, and I want to talk about how you, not as a marketer or a fundraiser or a storyteller, but as a leader, you've been leading a team through multiple crises. And in this last one, it's a months long sort of always on crises, you know, crisis response. Yeah. How do you keep a team engaged and motivated and not like how do you account for their need to have downtime when every day something else changes that you need to be, you know, getting out into the marketplace? Like, how have you navigated that? And what have you learned about your own leadership in that process?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, I think that if you build a phenomenal team, then that's always like where you start, right? Because you can't start building in a crisis, you're responding, right? So I've been so blessed by just the incredible people who've come to serve in Jews for Jesus. I mean, these people are brilliant and dedicated beyond belief. And in our team, I really believe there's like no egos in the room. Everybody is like all about like, you know, what do we need to do for the mission? What do we need to do to tell the story? They're super dedicated to the cause. And I think that kind of stuff then pays off, right? When there's a crisis, that you have a cohesive, humble, agile team that's ready to go and people are ready to step up. And I think as a leader, you set a tone by, you know, you're jumping in on your day off, you know, you're doing whatever it takes. And so you're not asking people to do anything you wouldn't do. And then you're really going above and beyond to praise and to thank people. I mean, I had a guy who was like at his son's hockey game, coding emails to go out. Oh, you know, and I told that story publicly like 5 times in front of him. Like, does everybody know? Like, you know, this guy was at his son's hockey game. So like really making sure people feel seen for the sacrifice they gave, I think is huge. But then you know what? It's interesting with Israel, I did experience, I'll tell you 2 things. One is that I did experience personally. I mean, there was also the rise of anti-Semitism across the world, right? And I'm Jewish. So I was also experiencing it personally. I mean, my best friend lives in Israel. I have family. I have a cousin whose best friend was killed at the music festival on October 7th. And so it was hitting me personally at the same time. I'm getting calls from family and friends every day, freaking out about what's happened. And so I did personally have some hard moments and some moments where, you know, being on a call with my team and being like, okay, this is the decision. And then calling them back 5 minutes later and being like, wait, let's talk about this again, because I'm a little bit frazzled. And I think just being kind of authentic and real and about where you're at is important, because we're humans too. We're walking through these things as well. We're not unaffected. But I learned something about myself in that, you know, I think learning that, to me, I learned, I think that there's a point that you can hit of fatigue where you become indecisive. So I found my breaking point in a sense, okay, which is actually, yeah, that there's some lessons in that. I learned some of that about myself and sort of, you know, the need to protect yourself from reaching that breaking point. I did actually, the second thing I was going to say is I did actually reach a point where I had to tell my whole team, we're shutting down on this day. Okay. Everyone's taking a day off, mandatory day off, because people had been working after the war broke out. A lot of people had been working, you know, around the clock for days on end with no day off. And I had to kind of say to them, like, unless there's, you know, the crazy, you know, unless like somebody on the field dies, or like there'd have to be a really, really crazy situation that we'd have to respond to, but or else we're not doing anything on this day. And I think even just that gesture to people, because I know some people took the day, some people were like, oh, I did actually work an hour or two, you know, like no judgment, but the gesture of the leader saying like, we cannot burn out, this is too important, take the day, I think was really important for people to hear me say that. And I needed it. Like I said, it's like you can reach a point of fatigue where you're not able to make the hard decisions.
Yeah, I think that's really insightful. Okay, so last question for you before we wrap for today, and this has been a great conversation, but talk to me a little bit about what your thought process is and your approach, because in each of these situations, you know, it's fast moving, things are changing sometimes literally by the minute. And at the same time, you still have senior leadership that have certain expectations around how business gets done, what, you know, revenue expectations are, what programmatic expectations are. What's the, you know, what have you learned about keeping, you know, that sort of that senior leadership team, the board, apprised enough that they're comfortable with what you're doing, but also not getting bogged down by having to like have onerous reporting structures and things like that? What have been some learnings in that area?
Yeah, great question. And this really ties into stuff we've talked about each time you walk through something like this, you get another like nugget of gold, because we used to have our CEO sign off on pretty much every marketing material that went out. And when the war in Ukraine broke out, I remember the conversation where it was like, we are not going to be able to respond as agile as we need to on the digital front. If we have to go through that number of sign-offs, and there was a call that was made that, you know, print would still go through the CEO, but, you know, digital was going to have a different process. And the gift of making that decision was that when the war broke out in Israel, we already had a protocol, right? Yep. And it was like, this is in an emergency, this is the sign-off protocol for digital. And so it's, I think those are hard conversations and they can be awkward, but you have to think about it as in, it's not just this crisis. You don't know the crisis 2 years from now, where you might actually not have to have this conversation in the middle of a crisis. And that could be gold to just have like a fallback plan. Then everybody knows the plan. And so I think I would encourage people like, have the hard conversations, because a crisis is a good moment to sort of, you know, reevaluate how things are going. And what we've been able to do, you know, and obviously people have different approaches, but I think what we've been able to do is have certain things like print that have a very high level of sign off. But then the blessing of that is, you know, that content is good to go and you can chop it up into emails, into ads, into social media content. You kind of have like a script, an approved script that you're working from.
Yep.
And I think that's a good way to handle the, like, you know, people at the top are sort of informed on that big messaging strategy. They don't need to see every iteration of how it gets used. Yeah. That would just be too cumbersome.
Awesome. Well, Ariel, this has been a great discussion. It's a joy to work with you. And I've been really impressed with the way you and your team have lived through crises and led through crises. So thank you for sharing that with the rest of the world today. If somebody wants to reach out and get to know more about Jews for Jesus, how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, you can always go on our website, jewsforjesus.org, you know, shoot us a message on there. You can find my staff profile on there and send me a personal message. I'd love to hear from you. And yeah, thank you, Andrew. I mean, so much of what I've learned from you, truly, you know, and from your marketing expertise. And so I think that's the beauty of this work is it's very collaborative and we all learn together.
Absolutely. Thank you again for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for joining us today for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. Please don't forget to rate the show and leave us a review so we can get our message out to more nonprofit leaders. And as always, feel free to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or at andrew@andrewolson.net. Be well, friends.
It can be costly and time-consuming for nonprofits to fill vacancies. My colleagues at Dickerson Baker's executive search team can help. Serving nonprofits is not just part of what we do, it's all we do. The Dickerson Baker executive search team has the knowledge, expertise, relationships, and access to networks that are vital for recruiting exceptional talent. And not just that, we actually guarantee our placements for a full 2 years, which is much longer than anyone else in the nonprofit recruitment industry. Are you ready to find exceptional talent? Schedule a no-cost, no-obligation consultation at dickersonbaker.com.